Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Nintendo Everything Refresh, the weekly show where we keep y'all up to date on everything new and exciting. Not just one of those things, new and exciting. It has to be both. In the world of Nintendo, I'm your host, Nick Serpa, joined today by the entire OG podcast crew. Very exciting. We've got Dennis Gagliardotto.
Hello, everyone. Excited to be back.
It is great to have you back, Dennis. We've got Louise Estrella.
Hey, everyone. I'm also excited to be back.
We're excited to have you too, Louise, but not as excited to have Dennis. No, I'm kidding.
That makes sense.
We're excited to have you too, Louise. I'm just kidding. And we have Nickel Chaudé, who we're all very used to at this point. But
yes, I'm very boring.
To have you here too, Nicholas. No. Y'all are great. This is exciting. I'm very happy we have all four of us here. Because
Nicholas is like, let's just get this over with.
Because it has been a pretty big week. We had it, you know, it wasn't a Nintendo Direct. We just got one of those, but we got a bunch of, well, actually, you know, technically we did get a Nintendo Direct, just not focused on games. But yeah, lots of game announcements. We got a new look at some of the projects that Level 5 has been working on. So that's exciting. We got a big Mario Kart update that introduced a lot of things, so we're going to talk a little bit more about that. Some exciting games came out, so lots to talk about this week. We're going to start off by kind of going through some of these showcases that happened and breaking down the most exciting parts. So, the big one, we'll start with the Nintendo one. There was a Mario Movie Direct this week, and I'll be honest, guys, I wasn't really planning on watching this one because I kind of just want to see the Mario movie at this point, you know? I didn't really feel like I needed another trailer. I don't know
how you guys
felt about that. Yeah. But I will say, it was a pretty exciting trailer.
Yeah. They actually didn't show that much, I think.
Yeah. It did kind of feel like a recap of a lot of things we've seen before. If you don't want to be spoiled for the movie, I would say maybe skip to the next segment of this podcast. But yeah. But yeah, some interesting things that I thought were kind of amusing. The thing that really got me with this trailer was when they showed the Luma and the Luma's voice. I mean, that's just a stroke of Hollywood genius.
No, right, the nihilistic Luma was easily the best part of the trailer.
I also enjoyed that.
This is a Luma designed for the modern era Nintendo fan, clearly. But yeah, overall, you know, I think I'm really impressed with the animation.
I'm excited to see
how they're going to bring all these different elements together, and I hope that they're able to pull it off.
Yeah, they're putting a lot of emphasis on the Rainbow Road portion of the movie too.
Yeah,
I imagine that's probably going to be like the final act, big confrontation before they meet up with Bowser. He's probably taking the Rainbow Road to his castle or something. Yeah. That's something they've emphasized a lot, and that segment looks great.
Yeah, yeah, it sounds about right. In a way, you know, if this was going to be the big thing, I kind of wish that they had kept it as a surprise. And so I'm hoping that there's a lot more to this movie that they're not showing us. But I feel like the risk with all these trailers is, you know, I feel like we all have a maybe too good of a sense of what this movie's about, and it may not be as surprising anymore. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I think they probably still have stuff that they didn't show. And I think this movie will be full of references. So even if they showed some of the reference to us, I think there's still a lot that they are going to put in the actual movie. And even the Rainbow Road scene, even though we saw some glimpses of it, I think this is probably a bigger sequence, right?
Yeah.
As you said, the animation looks amazing. And we come to a point that I'm actually like, there's stuff in this movie that I want to see in the games. Like the new cards, the visual of the Rainbow Road. It looks so, so amazing. I think they are doing, in the arts department, they are doing a really great job here.
Yeah, there's no way they're not using some of those cart designs in the future Mario Kart game.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I wouldn't put it past them. I will say it did seem a little silly for them to have a whole direct for this trailer. Because I don't feel like... I mean, I didn't watch the whole direct. I mostly just watched the trailer and caught up on the news afterwards. But Did any of you guys actually watch the stream? Like, what, do you think it was worth having a whole broadcast for?
No.
I mean, it matches what they've done for the other trailers. I think it's just Miyamoto pulling rank, honestly.
Yeah.
Because this is, like, his pet project.
I think he wants to present his baby.
Yeah. Which is not a bad thing, per se. It still looks like it'll be good. But I think it's very much... We're seeing so much of this specifically because it's what Miyamoto wants us to see.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. If, you know, he's been working on this a long time. So, I don't really blame him for, you know, wanting to push it. And I'm sure they want this movie to make a lot of money, which it without a doubt will. One of the stranger things though that did come out of this Mario Movie Direct was at the end of the stream they did a one more thing type of hype building reveal, and the one more thing was not a game, it was not anything huge, it was we have created a I guess life-size recreation of Mario's boots. And they are going to be on display at the Nintendo World Store in New York. And you should buy your plane tickets now to go look at his boots.
I saw photos of that too, man. Like, it was just making me laugh because, like, yeah, it's cool that it's like, you know, this life-size replica. But also, you have to take into consideration that these are boots, man.
These are just shoes.
Pictures.
Yeah, no, it's pretty funny. I was looking at this Gizmodo article. Someone from the site actually went to the Nintendo store, and there was a line outside the building to go inside to look at the shoes. Dude,
like, I saw
like
a video.
This isn't the Louvre, you know?
And that's like this moment.
This isn't the Mona Lisa.
With the big reveal where there's a lot of people around the boots and they are counting till the guy reveal the boots.
Wait, really? They had a countdown?
Yeah.
Oh, that's hilarious. It's funny because
they should have ended it at his shoe size.
Because
that
would have, like,
been funny.
Yeah. It's like the most PR thing I think I've ever seen them do. Like, it's like. Like, I mean, they're so proud of it, too. If you read the, like, little plaque that they put with the shoes, they were really keen to emphasize that they partnered with this company as a single prototype pair, and that they're made of, they were, like, you know, made of durable natural leather and mushroom-based insoles. Like, they really went all out on this.
And that's the funny thing, right? Because when Miyamoto started to talk about boots, I was thinking that this would be a partnership for merchandise. Like, they're going to sell a Nike boot that is similar to the one that Mario uses. But no, it's a one-time thing.
It's also just such an odd thing to single out. Like, out of all the attire, all like the accessories,
like,
and
could be
shoes,
the overalls.
It's just the boots.
Yeah.
Like, it's not even like the full outfit, just the boots.
Right. Right. Yeah, I don't really understand it. I will say that if they had made just like a mass produced version of Mario's boots, you know, I'd probably consider it because those things have got to be pretty reliable. I mean, he's always stomping on Goombas and kicking things and.
Yeah,
I mean,
no, they're great for that.
Yeah, they're great for
I'd be stomping on
Koopas.
I mean, your everyday business.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just don't get those from American-made shoes anymore. It's hard to
know. No, you don't. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, I think in most households, though, they'd be stomping on cockroaches instead. But, you know.
Probably. Yeah, they did give away some merch to people who went, though. You got they were giving out, like, a double-sided poster.
Oh, nice.
And my favorite thing, a little fridge magnet that's like an ad for the Super Mario Bros. Plumbing service. It's got like a phone number and everything that you can call.
Yeah,
I'm like, that's hilarious. I don't think my wife would be super happy if I had that on the fridge forever though. So, you know, it's not a major loss.
Before we go to another topic, I have a question for you guys about the movie. Because I'm not going to actually watch the movie in English, because usually kids' movies just come with Brazilian dub here in the cinemas. But I want to ask about for you guys, how are you feeling about Chris Pratt right now? Like, you guys are used to his voice? Do you guys still find a little bit weird? How is it?
It's about the same I think it was initially,
it
honestly,
change.
For me at least.
Yeah.
It's like, it's Chris Pratt playing Chris Pratt, but with Mario's face.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. Although, you know, at this point, I'm just like, you know what? I'm going to go see the movie, and I'm sure that after a few minutes, it's just going to sound like a normal voice acted movie, you know?
Yeah,
and
then you get used
probably,
to it.
Probably going to forget it's Chris Pratt at a certain point.
Yeah, it's not going to ruin it, but it's just like, I think the voice could have been better. It's what it is.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that showcase may not have had any games in it, but luckily there was a lot of other stuff going on this week. There was a Capcom showcase. Unfortunately, not a ton of stuff revealed in that one for the Switch. But we are going to talk about the Level 5 showcase, which just the fact that this even exists makes me happy. Because as we talked about a little bit in the past, Level 5 completely pulled out of releasing games outside of Japan a couple years ago. Things just were not making the money, and so they decided to focus on the Japanese market. And that was, as far as we were all aware, the last we were going to see of them. So it was a huge surprise in the Nintendo Direct when they announced, like, three different projects coming to the Switch within the next year or so. And believe it or not, at this Level 5 showcase, they actually revealed some entirely new games on top of what they had already shown off that are coming worldwide. So the first one that I want to talk about is Megaton Musashi Wired, which is their IP. It's their mech action RPG franchise. The first game came out, I want to say, a few years ago, but never came to the West. And this is their first global release for this franchise. And I saw a lot of folks were very excited about that.
Yeah, I think Level 5 is absolutely fantastic. They've put out some really quality games out over the years. And when they announced that they were shuttering all their Western studios, and that was one of the few times where I was like, oh, man, because like, their games, they don't feel, look, or play like other games. Level 5 just has this sort of DNA that is, it stands out within, you know, a gaming library. And I've had so many fantastic memories from so many great games that they've published. So when that news came out, it was particularly disappointing. And I just thought, like, you know, if there's anyone that should be bought up, that I think would be great. You know, Nintendo and Level, you know, acquiring Level 5, I think would be a fantastic acquisition for them. But, you know, to see them come back like this, you know, in a big way too, and just have all these games ready, is really exciting. So, but it makes you wonder, you know, if how they're going about doing this, you know, if, I don't know. There's a whole lot of behind the scenes questions that I have in terms of like, how is the localization process, you know, why did you shutter all the Western studios, you know, if you're going to ultimately still, you know, publish games in the West too. And, you know, are you now using more resources, you know, by having just a single, or maybe they have more, I don't know exactly how many studio, you know, or headquarters they have, but how is the distribution of work happening there? You know, is it more? Is it less? Is there, does it cost more? You know, there's just so many questions I have. But all that stuff aside, it's super exciting to see all these games come out. And all of them look great, too. That's the best part.
Yeah. I'm not super familiar with Megaton Musashi. Oh, that's a hard one to say. But, I mean, I think one of the things that really stands out to me about it is it feels like this, like, just really unique take on like a mech action game. Like it's sits somewhere in between like the really just, you know, like the Gundam style games. You know, it's not quite in that camp, but it's also not leaning super hard into the realism like Armored Core. Like it really feels like it's kind of sitting in its own little niche, and it looks very, very over the top. A big focus on customization in this game, a big focus on online play. So, you know, I'm really glad this is coming over, because this feels like the kind of game that could really land with a very specific audience.
Yeah. It makes me think of Deus Ex Machina, but more Saturday morning cartoon and more emphasis on cooperative play.
Right. Yeah, that's a great way to put it. Yeah, and Dennis, to give you a little bit of context, at least as of a few years ago in 2020, their Wikipedia page, which, you know, not the most reliable source, but as of 3 years ago, it says they had about 300 employees. So it seems like they've gotten pretty big at this point.
Okay, all right.
So I'd imagine
that's a pretty massive studio, actually. I didn't expect them to have that much. Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, they were not that big back in the DS days. You know, they always felt like a smaller studio kind of punching above their weight. And so, yeah, it just seems like they're in a different place now, which is great. The other big just kind of announcement that I don't think really a lot of folks were expecting is there's a new Inazuma 11 game called Inazuma 11 Victory Road. They have been working on Inazuma 11 projects for a while. Some of them have gotten canceled or delayed or kind of reworked. And it has been a long time since we've gotten an Inazuma 11 game here in the West. And this one is coming. It is coming sometime in either later this year or early 2024. And it's, for those who aren't familiar, Inazuma 11 games are all about soccer. They're basically soccer RPGs. And this one seems to kind of be like not quite a reboot, but somewhat of a reimagining of the whole franchise's premise. They're saying that in the main story mode for this game called Chronicle Mode, there are over 4,500 different characters from throughout the series, which is insane. I like can't even fathom that many characters in a game.
Yeah, considering that it is soccer, right? So you have
a
lot of characters in the field at the same time.
How many different teams would that be?
I have no idea. Yeah,
they probably have a whole league.
I don't even know if that's teams. It's probably one for each fan in the stands too. Like, that's crazy.
I really like the mix of JRPG and sports, and I think it's fun to have a, like in Inazuma 11, it's not only like a mix of JRPG and sports, but you have all those different characters. Like, it has its own anime and a lot of personality. So, and I think this game was announced for a while, right? So it's fun to see such a high profile project in a soccer JRPG. And it is surprising because if you look at all these games that you are seeing right now, they seem to be more high profile than all the stuff that Level 5 used to produce in the past. So, I don't know from where they are taking that money, but I'm liking to see all these projects. All of them look really like great JRPGs and great games in general.
Yeah, the animation is top notch. And with Inazuma 11 specifically, they're saying there's several hours of like just full blown animation in this game. Like, clearly they're investing some money into these projects. Nice. I've never played one of these games, but I'm like you, Louise. I really like the idea of taking like sports gameplay, which I actually can find pretty enjoyable, and framing it around a story or some other kind of, you know, a story premise that goes beyond just simple sports. And I feel like it makes these types of games a lot more engaging. And so I'm actually really excited to try this at some point. Dennis, Nicholas, do you guys have any experience with Inazuma 11?
No, it was always something that I had seen back in like the DS and I think maybe early 3DS days. They're talking about games and be like, huh, that's neat. Like soccer RPG, that's an interesting concept, but I never got super into it. But I'm very happy to see it back. It's always seemed like such a huge franchise in Japan, and I'm sure that its absence was felt pretty harshly by a lot of fans here, so it's nice to see. All the legacy stuff does seem insane. Like you said, the 4,500, just being able to play with old characters, very cool fan service thing, and also feels very fitting for the return to the West. Like, actually being able to re-experience the older games in some way through that. Very cool.
Yeah, totally with you. All right, so on top of those games, they also showed some trailers for some of the games they showed in the Direct. We got a huge look at Deca Police. And I'm not going to talk too much about it here, just because we talked about it just a few weeks ago. But I will just say that this game just looks really impressive. It looks like there's they're really placing a lot of emphasis on the actual detective portion of this game. As in, like, they show, you know, you're picking up evidence, and then you have an actual, like, evidence board where you have to, you know, make your connections and your logic. And It looks like there's some scenes where you might be kind of like interrogating people. And on top of that, they still managed to fit in a turn-based combat system in this big open world. It's like, man, like they're really putting everything into this game.
This was the one that I think out of everything that they showed, like this was definitely the one that looked the most exciting to me. Like the moment this came up on the screen, I was just like, oh yeah, this is the one.
Yeah.
This is the one. I need this now.
It's kind of become its own genre at this point. I mean, if you take a game like this, you know, think about the other ones we've gotten recently. We're getting the Master Detective game, Rain Code. Yeah. We had the AI, the Somnium Files, that little duology.
That's right.
You know, we're getting all these games where you're just kind of this detective solving these over-the-top crimes. And
even Astral Chain as well.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, Astral Chain's got some elements, for sure. So I'm really excited about that one personally. It's supposed to come out later this year, which is awesome. I think the game, though, that I'm most excited for personally on this list is the new Professor Layton game. Professor Layton in the New World of Steam. I don't have a ton of experience with this franchise, but I played a few of the games way back on the original DS, and this just seems like they have not lost even a touch of their charm and their talent in crafting these worlds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't have much experience. The art
style looks amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I don't have much experience with Professor Layton, but one thing that I saw people talk about is that they specifically shouted out the puzzle designers for this one. Apparently, the original designer of the puzzles had left when they made some of the, I think it was the Lady Layton games was the name of them.
Oh, yes.
And people had some complaints about there where the puzzle design just wasn't quite as good. So the fact they're specifically contracting these apparently well-known puzzle makers for the game seems like that's something they've really taken to heart in terms of that criticism. And they're definitely going to be emphasizing the fact that puzzles really are back to what the standard used to be, I guess. Which is always cool.
Yeah, I'm always impressed by just how many unique puzzles they're able to cram into each of these games. Like, there really is not a lot of repetition with any of them. Somehow, like, even with all these puzzles, they managed to tell an interesting story. Again, I've only played some of the early Professor Layton games, but, you know, the stories just, from what I've heard, just get more and more complex and better production values as they go on. And so, gosh, the fact that we're getting, you know, one on the Switch with all these modern production values and animation, it's going to be so good. I know it.
I hope we have an English dub for it. That's probably the one concern at this point is if they're not going to go all in because it's basically their re-entry into like the Western market. So they won't put the resources into a Western dub, which I hope is not the case because Layton's English voice is kind of iconic.
True.
Even without having played like any of the games, I still know what that sounds like. So I hope that they actually do commit to that and hopefully we get the old English VA back.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be nice. I'm with you. He does have kind of an iconic voice, one might say. But yeah, honestly, I'll play it in any language. I just want to play it. Okay, and then the last game that they showed off that I want to mention real quick is the new Fantasy Life game, Fantasy Life I, The Girl Who Steals Time, which got a 3 to 4 minute kind of deeper dive trailer. Honestly, you know, I don't have too much experience with this franchise. It looks pretty similar to the first game, just kind of maybe a little bit bigger in scope. I'm interested to see like what these time travel mechanics that they're hinting at are, how that's going to play in. But this one I'm not as excited about just because I feel like we've gotten so many of these types of games lately. Where are you guys at with this one?
I played the original Fantasy Life, and I never got into it much. I don't think it was necessarily a bad game, but it never felt like I had a solid goal, because there was so much split between the different roles that you could try out that it just felt kind of meandering. I don't know if that's just the way I played it or whatnot, but... So I don't have a huge interest in this one. I think, like you said, the thing that I'm most curious about is the time traveling mechanics, because I'm not sure how that will work with the whole town building, like, simulation portion of the game. It seems kind of at odds. Like, what happens if you build a structure in the past and then go back to the present? Will it still be there? Will it have changed in any way? Like, vice versa, if you build stuff in the present, will that just not be reflected in the past at all? I'm just curious how that's going to work mechanically, because it's a very different concept.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I feel like they still have a lot more to show with this game. I really do love that, like, the graphics are definitely giving me some nostalgia for this one. Like, it really does look like a game that was, like, ripped off the 3DS and just made sharper and more pretty. Which, hey, you know what? With the death of the 3DS, I'm there for it.
Impending this type doom. Of
game, at least, yeah. All right. One other showcase. Want to just kind of shout out a few things in particular. Nacon, they have become a pretty prolific publisher over the years. They put out a lot of racing games, a lot of sports games on the other platforms. But they do have some studios that are working on some more interesting, kind of unique one-off projects. A really big one that was a huge surprise when they first announced it, I think last year, was they're working on a big-budget RoboCop game. It's called RoboCop Rogue City. It is a first-person shooter slash adventure that kind of looks, in a way, like similar to like the structure of something like Deus Ex, where you've got this hub world, and you know, but you've got some first-person combat, you've got some stealth, and we got to look at the gameplay for this game. And while I will say it looks a little rough around the edges, the shooting doesn't look like it's been quite brought up to speed yet. I'm here for this game, man. the way they kind of like looks like they like built the city of Detroit. You know, it looks really good. You see, like, in the trailer, RoboCop is interacting with some civilians. You can do more mundane things, like issue parking tickets to cars, apparently, that you show at the end of the trailer.
That's what I'm here for, man.
You know, they've got the signature just RoboCop voice acting, where he's just, like, super serious all the time.
Just deadpan.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah, it's like, cease or I will shoot. it's amazing. There's nothing quite like RoboCop, I feel like.
the game actually looks really nice. I don't know how it will run on the Switch. But yeah, I agree with you that the actual shooting looks a little bit... Like, maybe it's one of those things that you only understand when you actually play it. Because it doesn't seem to be like your usual FPS focus on action. I see some scenes on slow motion and stuff like that, so maybe it's the kind of stuff that only when you actually play you understand how the strategy works. But, yeah, it does look kind of different.
Yeah, it does. It's also throwing me off a bit. I don't know if you guys, noticed. I'm actually looking at some of the footage now, but, like, there's no recoil on any of the shots that he's taken on the guns.
Oh, yeah, that's why it looks
so
weird.
It's like... Yeah, that's the thing. Everything looks so stiff. Not like in a bad way, but like, you know, I don't know. I guess I'm just so used to recoil in games you know, it just, everything is already so perfectly centered when you take that shot. So it's almost like you don't need to move the stick at all.
Right.
You know, it seems odd.
Because it's RoboCop, right?
Yeah, and robotic enhancement.
Well, that's true.
That's
yeah.
what I was going to
exactly.
say.
Exactly.
Like, it almost feels like this could be one of those things that's like actually by design. I don't know.
I mean, it makes sense.
I'm interested
you know?
To see, like, how the targeting works, because, like, you can see when he's looking around, I can't tell if they did it just for the trailer or if it's actual gameplay footage, but, like, the way the HUD kind of, like, targets people for you with, like, the, you know, 1980s green neon lines going across the screen and locking onto stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, like, I hope that's in the game, because that's, like, such, it's just so unique, you know?
True, true.
But yeah, anyways, this one is somehow coming to Switch. I'm with you, Louise. I'm a little skeptical about how it's supposed to run. I will say that even though it was announced for Switch, they didn't mention it in the latest trailer. It was announced for the Switch, but they didn't show the logo at the end. So right. I'm a little curious about the state of that. But yeah, as of now, it's still coming, so... We'll see. All right. And then one more game from this Nacon showcase. This is another one that's just kind of been up in the air for a while. There's a new Lord of the Ring games in development by Nacon and Daedalic Entertainment, who are known for their point-and-click games. And they're making a whole game based on Gollum that is trying to tell his story that, you know, as it kind of occurred concurrently with the events of the books. And it's a very stealth-focused game. There's not a lot of combat from what we've heard. It's a lot about stealth and puzzle-solving. There's a grappling ability, so you know it's a modern-day adventure game when you got grappling. Yeah, so this one I think a lot of people are a little bit nervous about because it has been in development for what feels like a long time. It's been delayed several times, and it doesn't look like it's in the best shape. But this trailer gave me a little bit more hope for the game.
Yeah. Personally, I don't know if I'm going to play it, but I am interested in it. I've seen a lot of people online kind of not be a little worried about the game, not only because of what you had mentioned, the whole development issues, but also just because it's like, you play as Gollum. Who'd want to play as, like, Gollum as the protagonist? And I want to play as Gollum as the protagonist!
It does seem odd, yeah.
I love Gollum, though. I think Gollum is one of the more fascinating characters in Lord of the Rings as a whole. Just the story behind him getting corrupted by the ring and everything he goes through, I think it's super interesting, and I personally love that this is an aspect of the story that they're exploring. Because it was never really something that was very emphasized in the books or even the movies. So I like the fact we're able to actually get, like, a different viewpoint on things with this.
Yeah, I think, like, I don't know a ton about Lord of the Rings. I've seen some of the movies, but I've never read all the books. But yeah, that's kind of what I've heard online as well. And I don't know. I try and keep an open mind about stuff like this. I do like when we get to kind of take a deeper look into the backstory of some of these big canons. That's part of the reason why I was so interested in the Hogwarts Legacy game, because having grown up with those books, I was like, oh wow, this is going to really expand the lore. So I do appreciate these types of attempts. I hope they can stick the landing for all the Lord of the Rings fans that are out there. All right, let's move on to the rest of our headlines for the week. Now, as many of you as are, I'm sure, aware, we are quickly approaching the shutting down of the Wii U and 3DS eShops, which feels like the end of the end. You know, we're getting to the... This is like the real death of these consoles for a lot of folks. You want people to buy games anymore. We're going to talk a little bit more about that in an upcoming episode. We're planning kind of a retrospective episode of sorts, looking back at our memories. But the Wii U was in the news this week for, I'd say, concerning reasons. There have been an increasing number of reports of people who have not had their Wii U's plugged in and turned on for a while. That when they tried to turn them on, they were not working. They were getting an error code on the screen. And this is an interesting problem that I've actually heard about before. And it has to do with the flash memory on these consoles. The Wii U in particular, it uses an older type of memory that it can degrade over time if it's not used. And so if you have had your Wii U in a box for a while, you could run into this issue if you don't boot it up, you know, every few years at least, I would say. This is I would say, just a broad reminder to go check on your Wii U if it's been sitting in a box for a while.
This is Nintendo's last attempt to try and get you to play the Wii U.
I think it's funny to me, though, that like the flash memory is what's degrading, because flash memory, over a regular hard drive, for example, is meant to last like forever, like a very, very long time versus, you know, mechanical components. So, you know, the fact that this is happening, I think it just sort of makes me laugh. But it's unfortunate, you know, they don't build them like they used to. You know, so now it's...
Which is, like, I think a good thing, probably. But...
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's yeah, it's one of those things that it also it's, it seems like it just happens over time, and I'm this it doesn't seem like this is a widespread issue. I'm sure it's not affecting everyone, but I don't know about you guys, but I've had my Wii U plugged in for the last year and a half or so, and just trying to play through some of the miscellaneous games that I missed and all that. So I'm good for a little while.
Yeah, it hasn't happened to me just yet. I mine was in the box for a couple of years, and then I brought it back out maybe about 2.5 years ago because I wanted to replay Fatal Frame on the Wii U and during a Halloween stream, and then it killed me too because 2 months later, that's when the port was announced.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, yeah. Jesus Christ. But everything was fine, you know, and so it's unfortunate that this is happening to people because the Wii U, you know, for despite being a commercial failure, I had so much fun with, you know, so it's unfortunate.
Yeah, I kind of hope that even though they're shutting down the eShops, that they'll still support doing system transfers and all that for a little while, or at least being able to re-download your old games if you log into a new one. Because that's really my real concern is, you know, I know it won't be up forever. I feel like, you know, they kept the Wii. Can you still re-download old Wii Wii Shop games?
I think the shops are just dead, from what I recall.
Yeah,
I don't think you can even re-download things.
I think you might be right about that. But they left those up for a pretty long time. And I guess I'm just hoping that they'll still support, you know, Wii U and 3DS transfers and re-downloading games for a while. Because, you know, as long as there's a market for the secondhand consoles, which there always will be, you know, I at least have a little bit of hope that, like, if something were to happen to mine, I could still, if I wanted to, pick up a new one and re-download my old games. But yeah, it's still doesn't give me a lot of hope for the long-term life of these consoles. All right, well, let's, you know, in happier news, one Wii U game that continues to live on and thrive, living its best life, is Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, which not only this week got some new tracks as part of its Wave 4 of DLC, but I think the thing that got a lot of folks excited this week is we learned that we are getting 5 extra characters in this game. Once the DLC wave dropped, the character screen had 5 new slots that just had a question mark, which I think is more than a lot of folks were expecting because we only have 2 DLC waves left after this one.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it'd be fun to kind of speculate a little bit and say, which characters do we think are going to be coming in these next 2 DLC waves?
So I actually
have any predictions?
I actually looked this up because I was curious. I looked up what all the, because they specifically said returning characters. So I tried to find what all the returning characters that aren't in the game yet, like how many there are and which they are. And I think there was like 7 or 9, not counting Tor, because Tor just has everything. But there's some really neat things there. I think the shoo-in is definitely Diddy Kong. I'd be very, very surprised if they didn't bring back Diddy Kong, since that always felt like the oddest absence.
Yeah.
To me, at least. I think a really cool one that I don't expect, but that would be really neat, is Rob. He was an unlockable character in Mario Kart DS.
Ooh.
And that would be really fun just to see as like a little reference.
That would be fun, yeah.
Also, I want to see Rob ride a bike. I want to see how they would do that.
Oh, that would be.
Now that you mention it, I don't think they'll bring him back.
No, those are good predictions. Yeah, we talked a little bit about this last week, Nicholas. But yeah, there are a lot of missing characters that could come back.
Yeah, like Petey Piranha or Pauline are probably 2 other easy ones. But
right now, you said it's specifically returning characters only.
I believe that's what they had advertised. Is that they were getting new returning characters in future waves as well. So, I mean, it's very possible they break that, because, I mean, they already broke stuff for the expansion pass, giving us new characters and
new they don't follow new their gameplay rules.
Elements. Yeah, like, they could just say, hey, you know what? You get, like, movie version of Mario.
here's Samus from Metroid.
Yeah, like, it could be whatever if they wanted to be, but they said it'd be returning characters, so that's what I've been looking at personally.
Yeah, I see.
Right. They could bring over some Fire Emblem characters. I know they love a bunch of those in Smash.
Yeah, the five remaining characters. There's just Marth, Roy, Crom, Ike, and Lucina.
Oh, that would be fantastic.
It would be cool, though, if they, because one of the really cool things about back when Mario Kart 8 originally released was they brought in a few tracks and characters from some other Nintendo games, like right. F-Zero and The Legend of Zelda, and I kind of want them to do more of that. I don't know if it'll happen or not, probably not, but it would be cool if they used this opportunity to bring in some other Nintendo characters. I mean, who wouldn't love to see Samus and everyone just racing through a Metroid-themed track?
It'd
be awesome.
Give me Kirby and I'll die a happy man.
Yeah, Kirby would be amazing. It's just too
perfect. I don't think they would do that.
it feels like, you know, this might be it's probably going to be a while till we get another Mario Kart game, and so this is their chance, and I mean, just do it, Nintendo. I won't complain.
I think this DLC is now confirmed Mario Kart 9. Like, this is basically a whole new game at this point.
Yeah, I don't really need a new Mario Kart game. I mean, I wouldn't say no to one, but I just, like, there's so much content in this game now. Like, it is just the definitive Mario Kart package.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways. Has anyone been playing the new wave of tracks this week?
Yeah, I played a little bit. They're fun. If I'm being honest, they're starting to blend in a little bit. Especially some of the Tour City ones, because they all follow that same general format of three tracks, and it changes, you change which path you go on every track. And some of them, like Amsterdam, don't feel appreciably different from, like, Berlin or London. But, you know, it's still Mario Kart. It's always fun. There's always going to be some really cool standout tracks. The Yoshi's Island one I still think is great. I love that addition.
Oh my gosh, it is, okay, that I have a lot to say about that track. I think it is one of the best tracks they have put in the game.
It's a nice track, yeah.
The music that plays when you win?
Yeah.
Well, not even that, but just all the little, like, the coins are different.
Yeah.
There's so much, like, going on in the background. Like, you go through all these different environments in a single track, and there's all these little Easter eggs from previous Yoshi games scattered around. And the first time I was, like, up in the air and you're going down, and then the red path kind of appears out of nowhere.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I was like, oh my god, that's the coolest thing.
It's so cool.
Like, I feel like they spent so much time on that track, and it's like, it, as far as I'm concerned, it's one of the better tracks that they've added.
Yeah. And the stage clear theme when you actually win is so good. That's such a nice touch.
It's so good.
Yeah. It's like at the level of the Animal Crossing and Zelda. Track.
Oh, totally. Yeah. And you know, like, they created all that new music and stuff just for this DLC. You know, like, it's amazing. I also, as much as I agree with you, Nicholas, in general about the city tracks, I do think the new Singapore track that they released is really compelling.
It's definitely a standout. Yeah.
I've never been to Singapore, so I don't know. I'm not realistic.
Don't know
I've
if been it's in the, exactly but, like that.
I've been in the airport, if that counts.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
I used to know someone from Singapore, if that counts. There it is. But
there you go. I've watched a video about Singapore.
I think it's always night there, right?
Yeah, clearly. Yeah. Every time a new wave of this Mario Kart DLC comes out, I always drop everything to play it for a few days, and it's a good time.
Yeah, me too.
Kind of a related side note, the modding community has been hard at work continuing to add their own tracks into Mario Kart 8, using homebrew and method. This is not an official track by any means. But I thought this was fascinating enough to point out. So this modder, his name is Riazor MC. They created a entire Mario Kart track based specifically on the Hyrule as it was recreated in the 3DS remake of The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time. It's shocking. It is shocking how faithful it is to the Hyrule in that particular game.
It's shocking how it works so well. Like, I think it almost to the point that it's a playable track if it actually was in the game. Like, the map mm-hmm. of Ocarina of Time, it's a really great track.
Yeah, it makes me wish that rather than the Hyrule Castle track we got something that was a little bit more all-encompassing. Right. That actually goes through all the different environments. Because it's really cool. Despite the fact that it's really not... Some of the paths aren't clear and some of the turns are a little sharper and narrow. Yeah. Generally, it works surprisingly well.
Yeah, this is not something that you can actually play. He's not planning on releasing this mod. And the video itself is even a little hard to find. The Nintendo ninjas have tried to remove it from YouTube. But yeah, it's just... This is a fun little thing. Modding community always does interesting things with these games. Alright. Let's get into some more games. Believe it or not, they keep announcing games, folks. And even I keep telling them not to. I'm like, guys, we have enough to play. But they just don't listen. Totally out of left field this week, Wargroove 2 was announced for the Switch, which is just such an interesting release at this time, because we're getting Advance Wars really soon. You know, the first Wargroove was kind of billed as, hey, we're bringing back Advance Wars, but it's not Advance Wars. And now there's a whole sequel coming out that's been announced by Chucklefish, and we don't know when it's coming out, but... But yeah, this was a very exciting announcement for strategy game fans.
Yeah, I mean,
Wargroove. Has anyone played Wargroove?
I haven't. I've seen a lot of people really love the original, though. And also, the original has, like, an armored dog unit. So, by default, it's fantastic.
Oh. Well, yeah. That's all I needed to hear. Dennis, you were going to say something?
Yeah, no, I you know, it's I have access to this game literally on three different platforms. I own it on Switch, I own it on Xbox, and I own it on PC. And I've still yet to play it. I've just gotten this game three times over. Well, on the other two platforms, I got them for free. But on Switch, I mean, I bought it for, like, next to nothing. Uh-huh. And but yeah, I never got around. I mean, obviously, I got it three times with the intention of playing it each time. You know, and I just still have yet to really get around to doing it.
So. It's a relatable thing that you're expressing here.
But it looks great, though.
Yeah, I'm, you know, I think this one's a little, it's going to probably fly under people's radars for a little bit, but I think after Advance Wars comes out and people get their fill of that, I could see some hype coming up for this one. You know, this one is definitely, it's retaining the, you know, more traditional pixel art aesthetic that I think a lot of people associate with the Advance Wars games. Whereas the new Advance Wars Reboot Camp is taking on more of, like, a clay toy art style for its scenes. So, at least folks have options now, you know? You can't say there's no good Advance Wars-like games on the market anymore.
Yeah, that's for sure. That is true. It's a new game, a new adventure, right? So Advance Wars still is a remake of the original, so not actually a original new experience. So, I mean, for a lot of fans that like that kind of style, maybe it's worth.
Very true. We also got some release dates this week for some stuff coming out this summer and in the fall, which is crazy to me that we're already talking about those windows, like they're right around the corner. So Ghost Trick Phantom Detective, this was one of the Capcom games that was announced in the last Nintendo Direct. It was also really, they didn't show off too much during their Capcom showcase. This was one of the things they did show. We now have a release date for this Ghost Trick HD remaster, I suppose. It is coming out June 30th, and I think to many people's relief, it is not a full price release. They're charging $30 for this one.
Thank God.
Which I think was the right call.
Yeah.
For sure.
Which was the price of a 3DS game, right? If I'm not mistaken.
A little less, actually. Yeah. But yeah.
Oh, nice, nice, nice.
No, it's good. Yeah. It's a reasonable thing. I'm also glad it's coming out when it is, because it gives like a month and a half to play through Tears of the Kingdom with no interruptions.
Oh, yeah.
Which is probably about how long that's going to take,
yeah.
if we're being honest. Maybe less if you go...
But no, this is awesome. Boss.
Anyways,
I love that they're actually remastering some of the music, specifically because the composer is the composer for the Great Ace Attorney's Chronicles, and if you've heard that game soundtrack, you know that that composer knows their stuff. So that's really exciting to me. I'm just excited for this game in general.
Yeah, you know, if you look at on eBay prices for the original game, most of them are, you're looking at over $100.
Yeah,
for
an English copy. Really needed a re-release.
So I'm glad they're making it more accessible. I wonder if that, because there was an iOS port that we had talked about in the past. I wonder if that's still available. That's probably still the cheapest way.
I think it was like $10 or $20, if I remember correctly.
Okay. Yeah, it looks like it's still available. It looks like if you want to try it, they're not technically supporting this game on iOS anymore because it was released so long ago. But you can start it for free on iOS and then purchase the rest of the game if you like it. So that could be another way to play it if you're interested, or to give it a try if you're not sure if you're going to like this game. It's definitely more of a puzzle game. So, at least for me, I don't know about you guys, but I have to be in a very specific mindset to be able to do well at those type of games. We also got a release date for Rune Factory 3 Special. It is now coming September here in the West, September 5th to be exact. And this is leaning closer towards, somewhere between a remaster and a remake, hard to say for sure. But this was originally a DS game. They decided to kind of give this game some modern graphics, new character models, and bring it to the Switch. And it is coming in September now. Dennis, I know you're interested in Rune Factory. You played Rune Factory 5 as well, correct?
That's right. Yeah, I did.
Yeah, I think, if I'm remembering correctly, I feel like we were both a little disappointed with that game.
I don't know. It could have been... I just feel like for how long we waited, and then ultimately the product that we got, there was a bit of a discrepancy there, and especially when you compared it to the content that was available in Rune Factory 4. Rune Factory 5 just felt a lot more hindered by... For me, it just felt like there was no real clear vision at what they were trying to do. It definitely felt and looked like a Rune Factory game, but it just wasn't... I don't know. More often than not, I felt... it's a weird way to put it, but I felt disoriented while playing it, because I was like, I don't know what I should be doing now. You know, even with like quest markers and like, you know, just quests in general, I'm like, I'm not really following much of a point here.
I think it needed a little bit more polish and like a little bit more time. There are a lot of mechanics in Rune Factory 5, but they all feel kind of separate from each other in a lot of ways.
Right.
And so it's easy to just ignore complete parts of the game if you're not interested, which I think is in a way is a good thing, but also it led, at least to me, for that experience, just kind of feeling a little bit, I don't want to say bloated, but just kind of all over the place.
Exactly. Nothing felt particularly cohesive about that game, you know? It was just a big disconnect. I couldn't get truly immersed like I wanted to, unfortunately.
Right. And so I figure there's got to be a reason why they're bringing Rune Factory 3 over. I don't know if it's one of the more loved games on the franchise or not, but I mean, it'll certainly, I think, fix that problem at least. You know, since this was originally a DS game, it's not going to be quite as big in scope. Hopefully it'll feel a little bit tighter.
See, I want the ones on Wii. That's what I want, because those were the ones that like I thought I had the most fun.
And all that?
Exactly, and Frontier. Yeah, those two, Rune Factory Frontier and Rune Factory Tides of Destiny, those are the two I want more than anything, because those two were awesome. Those felt like proper like RPGs that had a great farming aspect to it also. Like, they were great. And Rune Factory 5 in particular just felt, you know, like you said, that everything felt so segmented and disconnected. It just, nothing about it was cohesive. But those ones on Wii, oh man, especially at that time, I had such a great time with them.
Yeah, I've always wanted to play Tides of Destiny. I've never got around to it, so I would love to see a remaster of that one as well. But hey, maybe if this one sells good, you know, not outside of the realm of possibility,
yeah,
I suppose.
We'll see. Yeah.
But yeah, Rune Factory 3 Special coming in September. We also got a release date for the second of three Front Mission remakes that are being developed by Forever Entertainment. We got the first Front Mission remake late last year. Overall, it was received pretty well. I think, you know, they're pretty straightforward. You know, they carry the same kind of pace of the original games. They're a very, I think, like, different type of strategy experience. I've never played them, but I'm very interested in doing so at some point. And it's crazy to me that they're remaking all three of these games. Like, you know, it sounds like the overall structure is very similar, but they're completely redoing the graphics and the art style, and it's a pretty impressive effort, I think, for these remakes. So yeah, we know the second one is coming in June now, so that's exciting. June 12th, to be exact.
Yeah, I didn't hear anything about how the first one was received. I hope that was a good remaster.
Yeah, it's still exclusive to Switch as far as I'm aware, which I really feel like it kind of slipped under the radar a little bit. I think overall people thought it was good if you're looking for this type of game. I think they wanted some more quality of life things to make the pace of it feel a little bit faster. You know, it still, from what I heard, felt a little bit archaic. It didn't do much to modernize the overall, like, flow of the battles. But, you know, I'm still interested in them. It's a piece of gaming history that I never got around to. And then one more release date to shout out real quick. The Trails series is just not slowing down, folks. We're getting the third, what is now going to be the third Trails game that we've gotten in about a 12-month period on the Switch. Which, there's a reason why I haven't even attempted to play this game franchise yet, and that is the reason why. Because these games are just relentless. Yeah. This one is called The Legend of Nayuta, Boundless Trails. This is a localization of a game that I believe was originally a PSP game, I want to say. This one I don't think came to the West. And I don't know where this falls in the timeline, because the timeline is very big and very complicated, but I know it's like a pretty crucial gap that this one is supposed to fill. So I think at this point, like, now that these Trails releases have been done, most of this franchise's, like, this timeline or this story arc is, like, localized and in English. So I'd say if you've been curious about this franchise, there probably hasn't been much of a better time to start getting into it, because you have so many games that you can play.
Yeah, I think Nayuta is from the second arc. I think the second arc has like three games. So I'm not 100% sure, but I think this whole arc is available, will be available on the Switch when this game releases. But the first arc, which has like the first Trails in the Sky and the other ones, it's not available on the Switch yet, which are the first games.
Right.
I'm not sure if you have to play all these ones, but it is a little complicated, this series. And there's also the new ones that are already announced and like are continuing this series. It's a crazy JRPG, right, but I want to get into it one day.
Yeah, I think I gotta get through some of these smaller franchises first before I even think about starting this massive 10 to 15 game franchise, or however big it is nowadays. If I can get through four Xenoblade games, then maybe I'll consider it.
Yeah, that's a good start.
All right, and in terms of actual things that have come out this week, I think this is one of the busier weeks in recent memory. A lot of good stuff this week. Some indies that we actually won't have time to talk about, but even in terms of like bigger games, quite a bit to pick from. So I'm just going to walk through these releases real quick. The first one is an RPG that I've kind of had on my radar for a little bit. Looks a little rough around the edges, but I love the premise and the setting of it. This one is called Mado Anomalies. It's a turn-based RPG, and it's set in kind of an alternate future take of Shanghai. It's got a lot of just, like, you know, neon and just really unique art style when you're out in the open world. I don't know how to describe it exactly, but it's also got, you know, in what has now become a very common trope in RPGs, you go into this whole other world and you're going into these, they call them rifts, and you're battling demons. I mean, it's fairly standard RPG, you know, premise, but I think the world and the setting are the big thing that's unique in this one. I haven't heard too much about it though, so I'm not sure how well it's landing with folks so far. It just came out this past few days.
Yeah, this looks incredible to me. But yeah, I haven't heard anything either. It just seems like it was just sort of shadow dropped. But it definitely looks up my alley. But $40 right now is a little on the steep side for something that I'm not too sure about.
Right. I wonder how long it is.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It seems like overall, you know, I'm looking at the Steam reviews right now. It seems like it's doing okay. It's got positive reviews overall. Just don't go in expecting like this full production as you would with like a Xenoblade or something like that. But
yeah.
But yeah. If you're looking for something a bit more grounded in reality, then boy, you're going to love this next game, which actually there's a review up on the site for it now, courtesy of Eden. So if you want more information, go read their review. But so yeah, this is a new skateboarding game called Session Skate Sim. And we're getting a small kind of rebirth of this genre. We got some Tony Hawk games a few years ago, and there's a new skate game in the works over at EA. But the thing with this skating game is it's supposed to be incredibly realistic and incredibly challenging because of that. If I remember correctly, you actually control the skating. So each of the joysticks, the left and right joystick, those control your feet. So you have to use the joysticks to kind of ape the movements that you would do with your feet to execute the moves. And so it's supposed to be a pretty tough experience from what I've heard.
It seems, I don't know, that seems a little a little more laborious than I would like. I don't know. Just, I don't know.
Are you not a skater boy, Dennis?
No, I am actually. That was the group I hung around with back in high school. But it's a little too. I don't know. I enjoy skating games, but I think there's a point where, you know, you have to realize like I'm you know, come on. I mean, this is a controller I'm using. I'm not out here trying to be the next. You know, I'm not going to the X Games. That's not in my future. You know, please not with a controller. You know, so
you're saying you're more of a Tony Hawk ride kind of guy. Like you'd rather have the
physical
skateboard. I rather have peripheral and
exactly. Yeah, that is not responsive at all. That's what I would prefer. Yeah.
Yep. There you go. Yeah, I like a good skateboarding game, but yeah, I'm kind of with you. I don't think I'm hardcore enough to to be good at something like this. So I'll probably wait for the EA skate game and hope that that's not a microtransaction-filled mess. I think I already know how that's going to go, though.
We'll see.
Another interesting release this week, we got a just kind of random, just a new DC Justice League game. I want to say this one is geared a little bit more towards kids, but it looks like it's got kind of some good personality to it. It's called DC's Justice League Cosmic Chaos, and this is a kind of top-down, I guess you could call it a brawler, would probably be a good way to describe it. Just going around as the different Justice League characters, battering enemies with your various superpowers, there's, you know, collectible costumes and all that. Doesn't look like the deepest thing in the world by any means, but hey, for all you Justice League fans out there, you got something new to play on the Switch. This is a very different type of experience than the upcoming Suicide Squad video game. So lots of different options out there now.
At least it's a single player experience.
Yeah, it's not a looter shooter.
Yeah,
that's true. I don't think you're going to have to worry about a battle pass with this one. I wonder if this is like the because, you know, in the new Suicide Squad game, you're trying to kill the Justice League. So I wonder if this is the prequel to DC's Justice League.
Yeah,
I can confirm that it is.
The big DS connected universe.
All the Justice League characters from this game just show up in Suicide Squad, but with the same chibi designs.
Oh, that'd be hilarious. You're like the super realistic Suicide Squad, but you're taking out these chibi versions of the Justice League.
But hey,
I'm kind of bad about that, actually. I'd be like, I don't want to kill these guys. They're chibi.
jokes aside, this game does not look as bad as it sounds. Like, it actually looks a little bit charming. But I know that Outright Games has been producing a lot of these games. Do you guys remember DC Superhero Girls that Nintendo even published little while ago?
And I do remember that.
Yeah, they all are like those. They are not bad games. They are not like fantastic also, but they are, I think they are perfect for kids. Like very similar to the Lego games, I think, in a similar department. They work in what they want to do.
Yeah, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. I'm just glad we're getting all these superhero games, frankly, and that there's different styles of them. So it's kind of nice. And it's nice that not everything has to be this kind of big, serious, grimdark take on superheroes.
Yeah.
This next one was a total just shadow drop. This was not announced previously at all. Frogwares, who has been developing kind of the modern era of Sherlock Holmes games, they actually have a few projects in the works right now. One of them is called Sherlock Holmes The Awakened, which is a total remake of one of their, not their first Sherlock Holmes game, but like one of their older ones. It's a total remake. That one's coming out in April. That was the only one that we really knew was upcoming, though. And so it was super surprising this week when they announced a port of another one of their older Sherlock Holmes games called The Testament of Sherlock Holmes. And this one originally came out in 2012, which was the 360 PS3 era. I have a soft spot for these games, which is why I put this one in the show. I really like Sherlock Holmes, the character. I liked the last round of movies they made. I've enjoyed the TV shows. I've enjoyed some of the books. I really like it. And these games are super cool because they really are trying to be these more immersive experiences. Some of them you play in first person and, you know, you're going around crime scenes and you're interrogating folks and looking for evidence. They actually are, you know, have pretty high production values, you know, good voice acting. They've just gotten better and better over the years. This one I've never played, but I'm really curious because it's just a random port that they're bringing over. So yeah, I'm probably going to check it out at some point. Does anyone else have a similar affinity for these types of games?
I never played it. I like the character. I like Sherlock Holmes. I like the detective game. So I'm interested in it. I saw the trailer. It has a very PS3, Xbox 360 look from that era, right? But it still looks, I think it still holds up somehow. And even if it's just for the story, I'm interested in those kind of games.
Yeah, I think, I'm not sure if this has had a lot of work done to it for this re-release. I really do think it's just kind of a straight port. The trailer that we have over on the site is actually the original 360 era trailer. But yeah, looking at the actual gameplay for the Switch version, it doesn't look like they've done a ton to it, but I think it still looks pretty good. And yeah, these games are kind of in a genre of their own, so you'll love to see it. And then, yeah, kind of along a similar note, gosh, there's a lot of detective games in this week's episode. This next one is a Square Enix project came out of the last Nintendo Direct called Paranormasite. It's one of their more experimental games, which they seem to like to put out sometimes. Last year we got that weird kind of FMV game, The Centennial Case, which I reviewed and really liked. And this one is more of like a visual novel type experience, which you know, anytime I see like a branching flow chart in a game like this, I'm like, all right, they made this game for me.
that's the selling point.
Well, Dennis, you know how it goes, man. You know, it's like, yeah. Like I was saying, these games are all kind of like a genre of their own, you know.
And they are, and believe me, I'm in the same boat. Though. I mean, I poke fun, but I'm in the same boat. It's just I love these types of games, and actually, in the case of Paranormal Sight, I mean, it was something that caught my attention right away when it was announced, and I love games like this. In fact, I think the review that we did just went up. Just maybe not even an hour ago. So so go to NintendoEverything.com and check out our review. On that, but yeah, I have been playing Dennis's it, and it's review. That's right, yeah, and it's a fantastic game, man. I can't recommend it enough if you're a fan of visual novel and horror games. It's just so good. It's so polished and high quality, and considering it's only $20, it is. I mean, you're getting just such a great experience with it that I think is on the level of, you know, other greats within the genre. You're definitely going to get a feeling of like the Spirit Hunter games, so like NG and Deathmark mixed in with some of the Jake Hunter games and stuff like that. It's just so good.
Yeah, no, actually I'm really glad you've been playing it. It seems like we're kind of transitioning into our last segment, refresh rate, because I want to talk about Fatal Frame, but Dennis, since you're talking about this game, since you've been playing it lately, so is this like, you know, is this like a pretty big experience? It's got a $20 price tag, which makes me think it might be a little bit more concise than some of these bigger, more sprawling stories, but maybe not.
It's it's definitely, so you're playing as multiple people to get different perspectives of what's going on. You have it's called the Seven Mysteries of Hanjo because they're based off of actual real-life urban legends in Japan, where all these different people have these curse stones, basically. And these stones are meant to help gather essentially souls from other people, because everyone that has one wants to resurrect somebody. Now, in order to do that, you have to take a life for a life. It's very dark. And it's very story heavy, obviously. So I don't want to talk too much about it. I think this is one of those games where you appreciate it more if you go in blind. And I'm glad that I did, because, again, I saw really just the art style and I was immediately sort of attracted to it. So, you know, when we got the review opportunity, I was like, yeah, absolutely. And I've been going in blind, and it's in such a great experience, and it's surprisingly scary, especially for someone like me who's sort of desensitized to all that stuff. It's gotten me a couple of times. You know, it's definitely very clever how it does its tricks and all the horror. I'll just say one thing,
sure,
before we move on regarding the game, where there's a part in the game, this was one of my favorite parts, where the curse stone, basically everyone has different parameters that they have to meet to trigger each curse stone, basically. And for one, you have to listen to a certain voice, and then for about a couple seconds, and then after that, you basically die. So that's how that curse, like, kills people. Now, the protagonist, well, one of the many, you go against someone who has that curse stone, and I kept dying, right, over and over again. I was like, man, what do I have to do? So I'm not even joking. I was like, you know what, let me just try this. Just on a whim, I went to the settings and I turned the sound all the way down. And I was able to proceed after that.
Oh my god.
And I thought that was the coolest thing. Yeah. Wow. I thought that was the coolest thing. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. I really like that kind
of stuff.
That's really cool. Yeah. Yeah. Man. So yeah, but you'll get that quite a few times in that game, and it's super clever how it's all done.
Yeah, that sounds like a really unique experience. I was skimming through your review, and yeah, it sounds like you really enjoyed it. And yeah, I really thought this was going to be kind of more like a static visual novel, but you're saying that there's a lot of animation and there's a lot more.
Oh my god, the whole thing. It's like Steins Gate Elite, kind of. Like, that whole thing was practically animated. Granted, they just took the anime and just sort of turned a visual novel out of it. But this one, yeah, no, there's not one moment of just static imagery. I mean, everything, it moves. Everything is animated, you know, and just the presentation of it all is just absolutely fantastic.
That's really, really cool. Yeah, Paranormasite is out now on Switch. It is $20 and is apparently very, very good. So, yeah, this one is definitely on my radar for sure. I really want to play it at some point. For my part, what I've been playing this past week or so is a game that I was very much looking forward to. Fatal Frame Mask of the Lunar Eclipse, the long-awaited English localization of this fourth Fatal Frame game that never came over from Japan. And yeah, it's, you know, overall, I would say I have some mixed feelings on it. I don't think it holds up as well as I had hoped it would. I really enjoyed Fatal Frame 5. That was my introduction to the franchise. This game, you know, being an older game, it doesn't feel quite as modern, which I don't have a huge problem with that, but there are some things it does very well. I think it's, if you're interested in horror and you don't mind like a slow burn story, something that really just kind of drip feeds you knowledge over time, this is a good example of how that can work. You know, there's not much that really happens in the modern day story, right? Like you play as these different protagonists. They're all visiting this island called Rogetsu Island that they all have some connection to based on what happened in the past. But most of the story is kind of learning about what happened in this place and what went so wrong that it caused all the island's inhabitants to disappear, right? So that's the mystery. And you mostly uncover it by picking up these notes and these journals that are scattered around. And the writing in these notes is very good. Like it's really compelling, and they do a great job at like building tension and slowly, you know, unraveling the story of what happened here. So I love that. But the actual plot, like what's going on in the modern day, is like really slow. Like there's not a lot of character development, and so on top of that, you know, the whole game takes place in these two buildings, and there's a lot of backtracking and a lot of visiting the exact same locations as different characters. And so I kind of reached a point where I was like, I feel like I've explored this place so much that like it's not scary anymore. But that being said, I mean, it's a Fatal Frame game, so some of the things that just people love about this franchise are just as good here as they've always been. Like I'm so in love with the whole ghost hunting mechanic where you whip out your camera and you're frantically trying to align the ghosts in the viewfinder and not let them get too close to you and corner you. So it's a really good release, but I don't think it's necessarily the best Fatal Frame game. And I think unless you're a hardcore fan of the franchise, you'll probably have a better time with Fatal Frame 5, in my opinion. Dennis, you were just saying earlier that you're like, you know, you just went back and you played Fatal Frame 5. Are you interested in this re-release?
Oh, I definitely am, yeah. But basically everything you just said was more or less how I felt things were gonna be, so even though I'm excited about it and I love Fatal Frame in general, it's not something that I felt the need to jump into right away. I almost did. I almost actually like considered pre-ordering it on Xbox, but I ended up just passing on it. I was like, you know what? Because there's just other stuff that I rather prioritize, that I rather put that money towards instead, and like Octopath Traveler 2. So right. But yeah, it's definitely something I'll eventually pick up, but it's not something that I needed right away. You know, I was like, no, I'll wait on this. You know, I'm excited, but yeah, I can wait.
Yeah. Yeah. No, don't get me wrong. Again, very solid, you know, Fatal Frame game. But yeah, I think overall it's unless you're like really interested in this franchise, I think Fatal Frame 5 is probably a better game overall. The one thing with this game that just drives me a little bit crazy, and I get that it's an older game, but there's this like film grain effect just over the entire game, and I'm sure like at some level it's like an artistic choice, right? Because like they want to make it seem like all old and give it that kind of vintage film look. Like I get it, but the effect in this game is so strong that it is like distracting. and it almost feels like they cranked it up even more to kind of cover some of the visual scenes, and there's no way to turn it off or anything like that. So
yeah, I, see,
that
it's like
a
that
big turnoff for me. Yeah,
I can see that. It's like that for Paranorma Sight also. That's one thing I forgot to mention, where Paranorma Sight has this insane chromatic aberration that is so heavy, and you can't disable it or you know, tweak it at all. It is over the top. So, you know, you're going to have all these sort of red and blue sort of fractal effects everywhere, on every sort of edge, every sort of surface of that game. And it is, because you know, it's meant to sort of replicate an older sort of VHS aesthetic, because it takes place in the 80s. Uh-huh. But it is a little over the top. Like, it's much. It's a little much, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of those things. I don't always understand why developers do it, but we've got to live with it nonetheless. All right, Louise, your turn. What have you been playing these past few weeks?
So I'm actually playing... I don't remember if I said that the last time, but I'm playing Fire Emblem Engage yet.
Yeah, we did talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I finally made some progress in the game. I think I'm on chapter 12 right now. And like...
Okay.
This one, basically, every battle is a chapter, right? And I'm having a blast, man. Like, the game is really, really fun. Nice. Even though the story is not that deep, like, the dialogue is really cliche, I think it still is entertaining. I'm still having a great time with all the characters, all the twists. And I kind of like how over the top it is. Like, every chapter, there's, like, 3 or 2 new characters, and all of them have these crazy designs. They all have different personalities and stuff like that. So I'm really enjoying the game for what it is, like, this celebration of the Fire Emblem series. And, like, of course, a big help is that the gameplay is really, really solid. Like, every battle has been a blast. All the strategies, the new mechanics, the engage mechanic, the break mechanic with the triangle of weapons, I've been enjoying everything. So I think it's just a great RPG. It's just a fun game to play.
Yeah, no, that's awesome to hear. I'm glad it's growing on you a little bit. I think what everyone has said about the story, like, not being very deep and stuff, you know, like, that was a bit of a bummer for me, and that's part of the reason why I haven't been, like, in an urgent need to pick it up. But, you know, sometimes you don't need the deepest stories in an RPG. Sometimes you just need really tight gameplay. You enjoy some over-the-top anime shenanigans, and you get on with your life, you know? I mean, it's...
And don't get me wrong. The game still has some plot twists and stuff like that. Like, I just...
Sure.
From chapter 10, like, there's some major things happening. I think it's mostly the dialogue that is not that profound. Like, the characters, they are more caricatures and stuff like that. But the actual story still is epic and exciting, like a usual Fire Emblem story.
Mm-hmm. Friendship and bonds, right, though.
Yeah, this game was always going to get compared to Three Houses, and so I think that's where a lot of folks' narrative expectations were coming from. But yeah, I bet if you take it as its own thing, it probably, you know, the context is very different in that way. All right, well, Nicholas, you want to close us out? What have you been playing this past week or so?
So 3 main things, really. One is that I've been playing more of Octopath 2, which has been fantastic. I've gotten all the chapter 1s and all of the sub-jobs. Well, all 8 of the main sub-jobs. And then the other two things is there's a couple of demos that came out recently. One for Grim Grimoire and the other for the Bayonetta Fairy Tale game. I think Cereza and the Lost Demon. Bayonetta Origins is the name. And I've tried both of those.
Bayonetta Fairy Tale game. I love it.
I mean, you know.
That's what they call
apt.
It. Yeah, yeah.
No, so I tried both of those, and those have also been really interesting experiences. Grim Grimoire, I tried mostly because it's a VanillaWare game, it looks great, and I want them to port Muramasa to Switch, so I'm willing to give this one a shot.
So buy it, please.
I mean,
please buy this game.
Honestly, because it's more of a tower defense style game, and that's not a genre that generally appeals to me much at all. But I still wanted to give it a try, and it's fun. I can't decide if I like it or not yet. Not because the game itself is bad or anything, just because, like I said, it's not a genre that necessarily appeals to me. But there have been moments where it's kind of clicked and has gotten me interested, so I might go through with it. I think the actual game releases in early April, so I'll see then. But good impression. It also has save data transfer on both of the demos, actually. So that's always nice. I'm glad when demos do that. And then Bayonetta is great. I think I'm going to pick it up at launch now.
Really?
Oh, now I'm going to test this demo.
Yeah.
Yeah, the demo lasts about, like, an hour and a half. You go through the first main area, which is more of a tutorial area, mind you, but still. But, like, the game just nails everything presentation-wise. It's genuinely baffling how it does so well. It's, like, visually, it's probably one of my favorite-looking games on the system. They just do the fairy tale aesthetic so well. The art style is so good. The writing is kind of quippy and clever. It's like fairy tale like, but it also has a lot of charm to it. A lot of like character personality and sass and whatnot.
Sure.
It has a neat little setting where throughout the story there's a narrator speaking to you because, you know, it's supposed to be a fairy tale-esque vibe. And there's a setting where you can actually change where you have the narrative speaking to you from in terms of just like the audio. So you can actually set it so that it's speaking from like to your left or to your right or from behind you rather than just coming from in front. So you could have it set up differently where you have the audio coming from a specific angle, like a narrator narrating what you're doing from behind you, which is not a setting I've seen in another game before. And I thought that was really neat. Otherwise, the gameplay's fun. It sort of strikes me as a Zelda-like more than anything, which is very, very exciting. Because that's kind of why I was hoping this would be, and that seems to be the direction it might be going towards. But everything has just struck me as being pretty positive. I'm still a little concerned about, I guess, how short or how shallow, I suppose, the gameplay might be, if there isn't a whole lot you can do with the different abilities and whatnot. But given it's also only, like, the first hour or two, I assume there's going to be more content, things you need to unlock in the future. So
nice.
Well, that's awesome to hear. I'm really curious to see how that game will land with folks. Seems like everyone who's played it has really enjoyed it, and I guess if you've never played a Bayonetta game before, you could start here and get the full backstory.
You might not get an accurate assessment of how most of them are played, but
right, maybe not the best place to start, but yeah,
it's very good.
All right, I recommend it. Well, very cool. Well, thank you guys so much for joining us this week. I know this was a longer episode of the podcast, but we really appreciate everyone who has listened to the end. It is the busy season, and we're going to keep bringing you guys all the interesting news as it occurs. So if you like this episode of the show, please come back next week. Spread the word to your friends. We really want to grow our listenership. So if you like what you heard, please let your friends know. If you have any feedback for us, you can always email us. Our email address is in the show notes. And yeah, with that, that's our episode for the week, and we will be back at you next time with everything new and exciting in the world of Nintendo. See you guys later.